We were talking about people who were happy or are happier, but we don't know everybody. And then Albrighton came up.
Yeah, and I think Gareth was going to say something about that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to remember. Both of our games with Spurs last year were 2-1 to Spurs, and Rafael Vandervaart scored both of all of Spurs' goals through the two fixtures last season. And Albrighton was the guy who scored for Villa in both games. That was just an interesting fact. I don't really have a whole lot. I don't know how that's necessarily pertinent, aside from Mark Albrighton is a good player and he deserved to be playing that game, especially when you consider that. Oh, who was it that McLeish brought in and put on the, I think he put him on the wings. Was it Delph?
He did bring in Delph, but I think that was for Hurd.
Oh, I thought Delph was for Hutton.
No, there were only two subs and Chris Hurd was injured, so.
Okay. But, well, because I think Hutton went off at some point.
But the point remains that why wasn't Albrighton even on the bench? And
yeah, why is he playing with the reserves? I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous that he, and we've said this before, and we'll continue to say this for a while until something changes, and I don't know what it is. But yeah, Mark Albrighton is being underused.
Do you guys just think that McLeish just doesn't like wingers?
He used Sebastian Larsson a lot with Birmingham. I think they ran a lot through him, and he played on the wings. But yeah, I guess I can see where you're coming from, because I think he tends to set up his teams more centrally, you know, with a strong central defense. And certainly with Birmingham, they also had a strong central midfield, which we don't have anyone the sort of the caliber of Barry Ferguson, as ridiculous as it sounds, because Barry Ferguson is playing in the championship right now.
Any thoughts, Andrew?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, it's pretty obvious that wingers just aren't. I mean, look who's playing on the outside. Heskey, Agbonlahor, and Inzaghi doesn't even play anymore. So he barely plays, right? So, I mean, he obviously doesn't use the guys that can play on the wings. On the wings, he either benches them or puts them in different spots. I mean, it's, yeah.
Well, and I guess since this is sort of naturally segueing, we're going to start, we'll talk about McLeish, because something that McLeish said, and we'll come back to this, because he totally blamed the players for what happened on Monday night. But he said that he couldn't believe that people thought he was, or people were accusing him of playing defensively, because he had been playing with four forwards and he just decided to take one off for this particular game. And that's not, like, I mean, I guess technically Heskey's a forward, but I don't think that's how he's being used.
No, I agree with you. He's not being used that way at all. That's what I don't understand. I mean, if you're putting him, what his specialty is holding up the play, right? As kind
right.
of a center
yeah.
forward. Yeah.
And I'm a much bigger fan of Heskey than anyone has any right to be, just because I enjoy watching him sort of lump around the field. There was a particularly exciting moment, I think, in the Sunderland match, because Sunderland had this little tiny young ginger midfielder, and Heskey absolutely bowled him over. It was hilarious.
Heskey didn't even look like he knew what he was doing.
He probably had no idea that he had done that. Like, he probably didn't feel anything, I would imagine. The man's an absolute bulldozer. But there are things that he can do well, I think. I think he can hold the play up reasonably well. And I think if we paired him with Darren Bent, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. But that's not how McLeish is using him. I think to play him on the wings is absolutely ridiculous. It's almost getting redundant at this point. But I guess the question I wanted to ask when it comes to McLeish, and how much would you say that McLeish is to blame for, you know, the current failings of the team, particularly on Monday night? And how much of that would you put on the players? Andrew, start.
Yeah, I mean, I would put all of Monday on McLeish, just because the way, like I said, the way they lined up, it didn't give him a chance. And there was no trust in the players at all. The people he put out there were, how many of them were even in their preferred roles, for Christ's sake? I mean, that's part one. I mean, part two is you line up that way and you're saying, and it's Tottenham. I mean, Yeah, Tottenham is good. They're a good team. They're a very good team. But there are five or six teams just as good, if not better, that we have to play. Are we going to give up and roll over for every single one of those games too? What's the point? I mean, you can blame it on the players all you want, and I'll certainly give some blame on that first goal to James Collins, who just completely whiffed on that clearance attempt. But, I mean, going forward, they had no shot. Imagine if they went for it. You know, they could have played maybe Inzaghi on one side and maybe even Albrighton, who I don't even know if he's in shape anymore, on the other side, and had some kind of, you know, ability to get the ball to Darren Bent and let him do what he does best. There's no hope of that whatsoever. Why even play Bent? You know, he's not going to get the ball. He's not the kind of guy who's going to create his own chance. You know, he's a finisher. So I'm going to blame McLeish for the first time, I think, all season. I'm really, really getting fed up.
I feel so bad for Darren Bent because he's being absolutely wasted. Like, the emergence of Gabby has been, you know, great and everything, but I think Bent has suffered for it because he can't create his own chances. He needs service, and for all the things Gabby can do, and I mean, Gabby has set up some goals for Darren Bent. It's not like he's doing nothing, but that's not – Darren Bent isn't really getting an opportunity to do what he does really well and just put away chances to the degree that he was able to do that with Young and Downing last year. But
I was just going to say, yeah. Oh, go ahead, Kirsten. Sorry about that.
Oh, I was just going to quickly, before I address the major topic, is to say that I watched a bit of the highlights from the last Villa Reserves game, and Albrighton is playing. Albrighton seems fit, and Albrighton is putting in the crosses. It was an Albrighton cross to Barry Bannon that created one of the goals. No, it wasn't to Bannon. Anyway, he's putting in crosses, and if that's what we're looking for Bent, I just don't understand why he's not that bad. Whatever happened to him between the end of last season and the beginning of this one, unless they covered up a broken leg.
No, yeah, I think we know Albrighton well enough to know that his role is he runs up and down the touchline and fires in crosses, and it's erratic at times, but that's exactly what Darren Bent needs.
Right. I mean, it's if I'm guessing, it's because his defensive responsibility or work rate or whatever you want to call it is not up to McLeish's par. It's clear McLeish puts a high emphasis on defending and competent defending, and why would say he doesn't have very many competent defenders. And I would say he's sick of it. If he had the players he wanted, I'm sure the results would be better, but the style would still suck. And a guy like Albrighton is still probably not going to find his way onto a McLeish coach team. He's just not the kind of guy that Alex is looking for, I think. And I think that's basically what we're looking at. It's hard to say you want to bury a guy in reserves and then try to sell him because you're not going to get a lot of money for him, but I wouldn't be surprised if he leaves. I mean, what's his future like here? They don't even play his position anymore.
And I think that would be really sad. I mean, yeah, because we saw this with Craig Gardner. I think it was just last season, right? When came up through the reserves, is from Birmingham, and then left because he wasn't getting a shot. And I mean, when you think about it now, Craig Gardner, and I'm sure we're going to talk about his brother in the next segment. Craig Gardner would have fit in, like he would have a spot, I think, in Villa's team this season. But yeah, Christian, the main question still stands. How much of this is McLeish's fault?
I would say at least 90, possibly 95. I was certainly frustrated with James Collins. I think that was the worst performance we've seen from him all year.
Yep.
And then I was also frustrated with Darren Bent. The one time in his life when he's onside, he decides to not do anything with an open header because he thinks he's offside. The man needs to get a little bit more of a clue in his brain, stop being offside so much, or just take your chances. But other than that, the players had no motivation. They, as we've said, they weren't being played in their correct spots. Gabby was still running his ass off, but could do nothing because he barely ever saw the ball. And Darren Bent, besides that open header, really never saw the ball. So it's McLeish.
I'd be inclined to certainly put most of the blame on McLeish, but I will say that there's a great number of players, a lot of them signed for huge wages under Martin O'Neill, that I will be very happy to see the back of. Our squad has gotten very stale, and there's a lot of, I mean, there's a lot of just terrible, or not even terrible, but just below par people who should be in the Premier League under any circumstances, and they're getting old, but they're on ridiculous deals because, I mean, when we were sort of almost in the Champions League, along with Everton and Spurs, when we were of that caliber under McLeish, or not McLeish, O'Neill, I get them confused. But, when we were up there, Lerner was spending on players like that because we always thought that the one thing between us and the Champions League spot was Richard Dunn or was Stephen Warnock, which in retrospect is absolutely ridiculous. But, you know, at the time, that's how the club was run. And that's why I can kind of understand Lerner sort of scaling back his ambitions for a bit, because he wasted a lot of money last few years.
And how about this as a harbinger of, I don't know, sorrow, not to borrow a Metallica song, but if McLeish's transfer strategy is to raid the absolute bare cupboard of Tottenham's crappy broken reserve team or whatever you want to call it, I mean, that is not a good sign at all. I mean, say what you want, and I will this week when I finish it, but say what you want about, you know, seeing the end of Dunn and Collins and Warnock and those guys and hopefully getting in some fresh, newer players. Alan Hutton was, as much as we hate him, was a guy that McLeish signed. I mean, that's his guy, and he's got a couple years, right? So I, other than him just cutting ties and admitting that it's just not working out, I mean, he's our first choice right back, at least for the foreseeable future. I don't know how that's going to change unless they go out and just, you know, buy somebody else. But
wow,
not a good start. Not a good start in the transfer window.
I really didn't think I could get more depressed than...
Sorry.
I honestly thought that he was actually... I remembered Genus and thought, oh, yeah, Hutton's just alone too, but no.
I totally thought that as well, but no. I think we own him. Yeah.
We do. We own him. We bought him.
We bought him
like 3 months ago. I mean, he's here, and he's what? He's like 27, 26? He's not even old. He looks like he's 106. Anyway, so that's kind of what depresses the hell out of me. I don't know if it's a bad sign or what.
I don't understand the rationale. I guess I really should look this up, or even better, know it. But, I mean, we basically swapped Luke Young for Alan Hutton, right? Because I don't think Luke Young is a whole lot older than Hutton. And I'm not sure is there a substantial difference in the transfer fees either way?
I don't think so, but I know Luke, he definitely wanted, Young's 32.
Yeah.
There's a 6-year difference there, but he definitely wanted out. But I liked him better than I like Hutton, I can tell you that.
And we really wanted Luke Young's wages off the bill.
That's true.
I'm pretty sure that Hutton makes less, at least. That's a small consolation.
Yeah, they bought him on the downside, so obviously I don't think they overpaid for Alan Hutton. If you can, unless you consider paying anything for him, overpaying, which some might, I might. But yeah, I mean, let me see if I can see. But yeah,
perhaps the best we can hope for is that we will be acquiring at least one fullback in January, and that's Enda Stevens from Shamrock Rovers, I believe.
Yes. He's young.
He's young. I think he was up for either Irish Player of the Year or I guess Irish Premier League Player of the Year, which is considerably easier to get.
Yeah.
I guess that's some indication. Because
is Shamrock Rovers even a fully professional team?
They were very briefly a Cinderella story in the Europa League earlier this
they
year.
And I thought they
were partially amateur. Are they not?
Not anymore.
Well, I mean, okay. To watch them, you would think that. But they made it all the way to I think they got knocked out by Spurs, you know, of all people. But I think they made it a lot further than was expected in the Europa League, which I guess is better than nothing. They're the best Irish Premier League team in a while, which is saying basically nothing.
Which is also, I think, why Stevens was kept there until winter.
They wanted to be in Europa.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think he's a left back. I think he's...
He is. Yeah, that's right.
He's Warnock's replacement, and I don't think Warnock will ever flip to right back. I think it'll probably end up being Stevens and Hutton rather than Stevens and Warnock, or Stevens and Warnock, that'd be confusing.
For everyone who's asking, I know I saw some questions about Lehigh because he's the Gareth Bale equalizer, whatever you want to call him. He's still hurt and he won't be healthy until January. So I don't think we can depend on him for a while.
I was going to say, this would be sinful if I was not the Canadian member of the 7500 to Holt writing staff, but I completely forgot about Eric Lehigh.
Yeah, Lehigh still exists, but I mean, as we've mentioned, Stevens is only 21. Do we really think that McLeish is going to be putting him in?
No, I don't. He's a future guy, and I mean, at least it's something, and it's someone who we can at least look forward to seeing some development from. I guess. I mean, that's been my question, and I'm going to ask it to everybody. It's just I don't know where the depth or hope at the back is coming from. There needs to be a lot of restocking or something.
I think, as far as I can tell, the future backline is Stevens, Clark, and I guess Lehigh. If he can ever get to a point where he can compete with Hutton, and then just some mystery central defender, because God knows Collins and Dunn don't have a whole lot more years in them, and it's kind of miraculous that neither of them have gotten a particularly serious injury in a long time. Although I wouldn't necessarily want to tempt fate on that one.
Right, Inquire's going to go at some point here in the near futures. As sad as everybody will be about it.
Sort of as we're talking about the future, we got a couple questions on Twitter about Gary Gardner and about specifically about Gary Gardner, and he's performed really well. He scored two really really excellent goals against the Iceland under 21 team on England duty, and then he scored was it a hat trick?
Yeah.
I still don't know what next gen really is. Is it just like a friendly tournament for reserve squads?
No, I think it's under 18s, under 19s.
Under 19.
Under 19s, okay. Yeah. And it's just sponsored by Adidas and a tournament for the young ones, essentially.
So, I mean, the two questions, and I guess we'll sort of... We'll pair them together because they're pretty much the same. When does Gardner get a crack at the first team, and just how far can he go? So Kirsten, since you've probably watched more of him than either of us, why don't you take this one?
Well, I think as we've already discussed in the pod, that the real question is what sort of chance will McLeish give him? I mean, we already saw what happened with his brother. We already talked about what happened with his brother.
Well, I mean, wouldn't it be fair to say that it depends on how good he is defending? I mean, if he's not, it doesn't seem like he's going to get a shot.
Well,
that's just the way it seems to be going.
Well, I mean, the one thing he's got going for him is that there's just a giant sucking vortex in the center of midfield right now. Yep. And so, I mean, he could plausibly get a chance when everyone's healthy, but if someone gets injured, if Petrov gets injured, or whoever, I mean, there's going to be a call to bring Gary Gardner in, and I think it's entirely possible that there will end up being room for him. Not that I would wish an injury on Stylian Petrov, which I totally would.
but the problem is, just like our other central midfielders, Gardner's an attacking central mid, and
we don't use that at all. I mean, it's the way I see it, the way even at our most forward, and someone jump in if I'm wrong, but it seems like, you know, you've got the back four, you've got basically two center mids that at best, you know, the most attacking guy is going to play right around the center of the field. And then you've got two defensive wingers almost, you know, and it's just, I don't know. The day that Villa plays with attacking midfielders, kind of like, with playmaking abilities, I'll be surprised. We'll have a different manager by the time that happens, I think. I just can't see it happening with this guy.
So I guess the answer to that question would be he'll get his chance in the first team squad when either injury apocalypse 2012 occurs or when McLeish.
And man, I don't want to root for injury because I hate saying it, but I mean, it seems like how many people on this first team squad do you actually want to see injured? It seems like there's a lot.
Well, and I think our first exposure to, I mean, not Albrighton. Albrighton started in the first game of the season, but I think our first exposure to Barry Bannon came because of all those injuries we got right around the start of Houllier's tenure, which is when we were sort of scrambling to find any warm body we could start. Yeah. And so, I mean, there is an upside to those sort of things, even though you wouldn't dare to root for them because, I mean, we're kind of holding on as best we can with a full strength squad. So.
Right.
Let's see. What else did we get on the Twitter? At Mr. Alex Sheedy asked us directly after the Tottenham game concluded, what positives can you take from that farce of a performance? And we're 20 minutes into the pod or so, and we still haven't come up with any. I'm pretty sure none of us went for a bright side. This is where, Robert, we miss you very much. Especially because I think you said we'd win, and I was really looking forward to having you here. But
he seemed to have developed this sort of amnesia about that. He doesn't remember saying that we would win.
Well, because he was taken over by a robot at some point mid-podcast.
That's true. It's probably some sort of disorder, but it's a disorder that's tremendously entertaining. Andrew, can you think of anything positive at all to say about the game on Monday night?
I'm trying to come up with something. You know what? Yes. The most positive thing I can think of is it encouraged me to finish the article I've been thinking about writing and halfway through for about a week and a half now, because I now have visual proof and recent visual proof that James Collins is complete garbage. So that's a positive for me.
I think I heard, and this is sort of a secondhand stat or whatever, but I think James Collins has been responsible for either giving away a penalty or probably a penalty or an own goal in almost every game he's started for Wales.
Holy shit.
Like, he's that bad.
I mean, he sucks. And I can tell you a thousand things I hate about him, from the stupid ginger ring around his head to the stupid Vicks Vapor Rub on his shirt that I couldn't figure out what it was for the longest time. I thought it was like, remember when they wear poppies in the middle and then I thought he just peeled it off and never got rid of it. So I was like dumbfounded.
Milner was like that too. Not to, you know, say that word. Milner also got that. I remember. It's weird that I'm remembering that fondly. I think sometimes when Richard Dunn does something terrible, it's so obvious because of the style of player he is. Like, he's so last ditch that he just seems a lot worse than he actually is.
One big fact.
But I genuinely think.
Wait, did you say it's because he's fat?
Yeah, he's a significant. Well, it's not like, yeah, it's not like Collins is skinny. I mean, we've got a couple of fat loads in the back line. But I think Collins is significantly worse than that.
I agree
with
you.
No one really notices.
We talked.
Collins is really terrible, but
yeah, we talked in the game there about who we'd keep out of the four stalwarts of the back line, if I could even use that word. And I mean, out of all of them, I would rather have Dunn than any of the other three. If we had to pick one, you know, I mean, the other three can just go somewhere bad.
Well, I was trying to put together an entire, you know, Villa starting 11 of players that I'd actually want to keep. And I think I only managed to make it to 10. And I don't think that there was a lot of defense there.
Right.
So I was going to say, I think, sort of off the top of my head, the only space I'd be lacking would be maybe right back. Is that what you were missing?
Well, I didn't.
Because I think
she'd probably keep Lehigh just because Aaron would be sad if she didn't say that.
Yeah.
Maybe.
That's true.
Just a thought. But, I mean, center mid is lacking, I think, pretty heavily. I don't know about you guys. Oh, Kirsten mentioned Delph as someone she would keep, and I said I really could not care less if he stays or goes. I've seen enough of him, to be honest.
He had such potential. I don't know how you guys feel.
Yeah, but he's kind of not – he's not done anything with it. And when he was playing at the beginning, and I did not really care for what I saw. He seemed like he was quick to give the ball away and passes were
– It's probably because McLeish emphasizes a more defensive style. And so he's concentrating on that rather than anything going forward.
I think maybe the best he looked was when Julio had him play left back for lack of any healthy bodies at one point last year.
True.
That might have been his best game I've seen him play.
I think he was pretty good for that brief period he played when he wasn't injured under Martin O'Neill. But there's a caveat that it's entirely possible that during that season I was also playing as Aston Villa on FIFA, and he was just really good in that, and I'm misremembering.
It's true. Like, the way I found out about Delph myself was it was Football Manager 09, and he was still at Leeds. And I'm like, this guy is amazing. And then I found out that Villa bought him, and it was like for, I don't know, £1 million, £2 million or something like that. And so I'm like, this guy's got to be good, right? A big club bought him, and he's moving on up. So I had high hopes for him too. But since I've seen him, and we've seen him enough this year at least, for me to form my own opinion. But yeah, I don't care for him.
Kirsten, have you come up with a silver lining for Monday night yet?
Well, a silver lining for Robert is that I can't find anything about positivity being a disorder, which is what I've been doing for the past 5 minutes. So I don't think Robert is actually mentally imbalanced. But as for a silver lining, Hurd wasn't bad.
I was going to say, those are the magic words. I think that's pretty much every review I read about that match contained the words, something along the lines of, at least Chris Hurd wasn't absolutely terrible.
Yeah, and I don't know if I love Chris Hurd, like everybody seems to.
If I'm perfectly honest, I don't know what his natural position is. Like, I think he's been played in a bunch of different roles, and when we have sort of a young player who's coming up, I'd like to have an idea of what they do well and sort of where they slot in. But it kind of seems like he's just a guy.
Well, he's obviously trying to be some kind of a destroyer type player, right? I mean, he's going to be the guy who's going to go in and try to just tackle the living shit out of somebody. And when I commented during the game, I'm like, Chris Hurd is not going to make it 90 minutes. He got subbed out, which people were livid about because he was probably the best player on the pitch for us. I thought he wasn't going to make it 90 minutes. I figured he'd get red carded again.
Yeah.
Because he plays like an asshole. He's going all out, which is good and bad. And he lives on that edge, I think, which, you know, it doesn't hurt, but at the same time, I'm not sure he's seasoned enough to kind of know his boundaries sometimes.
You get the impression that he's kind of just charging around and trying to impress everyone with how passionate he is.
Right.
Which is, you know, which is something. And I think it's miraculous that it was him and not Hutton that got in sort of into trouble with fouling. But
yeah. You know. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, Hutton, everybody knows as the guy who's going to – he's the guy who the manager is going to go ahead after the match and say, he's not that kind of player, even though we all know he is that kind of player. He's absolutely a reckless moron. I get the same feeling from Hurd, although I guess Hurd hasn't yet reached that Hutton stage of you're bad and you're always going to be bad. So he's still got that kind of like ceiling or that upside that we don't know about yet, which I don't know. Frankly, I don't think he's the kind of guy that makes people go, oh, the future looks great, Chris Hurd.
No, especially not with that new haircut.
I mean, think about it. This is the Premier League, right? I mean, look at these other teams. Look at these great teams. And then we're talking about Chris Hurd being the best player on our team right now. That's...
Well, not the best player on
our team. I know. But you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like,
it's clear that there's a class that we're clearly not at with the roster, with the squad and the depth that we have and the youngsters that we, I guess, don't have.
Or don't play.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, especially sort of in light of how much we've absolutely slated McLeish about his lineup, like, I would imagine that whatever sort of idealized lineup I against hers would have gotten us similarly slaughtered. And I think, to a certain degree, we're just we don't have that kind of that high. We're not a high caliber squad. We don't have that.
No, we don't. It's not there. I mean, my thing that I was thinking that if they did play some kind of, you know, a positive lineup, I guess it's kind of like, wasn't it the Manchester City Cup tie last year where Houllier kind of went for it with the 4-3-3 and everyone lost their shit and got absolutely murdered? You guys remember?
No, that? I thought, wasn't Manchester City,
that was the one where he just gave up.
He forfeited.
He gave up. Okay. I was trying to figure out which one. He played a bunch of kids. Isn't that what it was?
He did play a bunch of kids.
That's what it was. Okay.
Yeah. Which was a considerably, everyone gave him hell for giving up. And I think that sort of really, really helped push him out the door.
Or to a heart attack.
Or to a heart attack. But, I mean, that lineup was, in retrospect, considerably more ambitious than what McLeish put out on Monday night.
Yeah, I distinctly remember us saying on the site that we were like, okay, you know what? This is exciting at least. We've got some things we can find out from this match. We can learn something from this.
Yeah.
Nobody learned anything from the Tottenham match except that when you want to not – when you don't want to win, you're not going to win. We didn't learn anything about any player that we didn't already know.
Well, to be perfectly honest, I'm pretty upset with Spurs and specifically Adebayor for not taking more of those chances and absolutely blowing us out. Because I feel like if people just remember that as a 2-0, they're completely missing the point.
Exactly, and he played almost like Cameron Jerome at times, where he just could not find the net. I thought he could have had 5 or 6 goals easily.
Yeah,
I mean he missed so many good chances, and it definitely could have been much, much, much worse. So, yeah, exactly. The score was 2-0, but we all – and it's not just us. I mean, every single person, there was everybody, even the most positive fans that I see on Twitter were just like, this – I can't take any from this.
And, I mean, during the match, I had promised myself I wouldn't do it, but then I broached the idea that it's entirely possible that – plausible, I guess, that we could end up in the relegation zone at some point this season. And I imagine this will become a running segment on the podcast, but on a scale from 1 to 10, with 1 being the least confident and 10 being the most confident, right now, how confident do you feel that Aston Villa will still be in the Premier League next season? I'll start with Andrew.
I would say right now, I'd say a 9. I mean, despite the way we looked, I still think that we're a team that's going to go out and beat the Swanseas and the Norwiches and the QPRs, even though obviously we didn't beat QPR. We drew with them, but that was there. You know, we'll get to the predictions for next week in a minute, but yeah, I still think Villa's got enough quality to beat those really lower tier teams. I don't think they're going down. That's just my opinion.
Kirsten?
Yeah, I'm thinking pretty much 8 or 9. I mean, Wigan is woeful. Blackburn are barely better. And we're not that bad. Yet, then again, that's what we were saying last season, too. And we were almost down there. So.
Well, yeah, go ahead.
I lost where I was going there.
Sorry. I think for me, sort of in light of this and sort of remembering back to West Brom, I'm still at an 8. Like, I'm 7 or 8. That's fine. It's not so much that I think that we will get relegated, because I don't think that we will get relegated, but I think that we've seen so far this season that it's entirely possible that we can get relegated, and that there's not a whole lot realistically, I don't think we'll be staying up on our merits. We'll be staying up because there's a lot of teams that are just so much more deserving of relegation than we are, which is pretty depressing. And so, you know, with that said, our next opponent is Swansea City, and it's in Swansea. And they just lost their, sort of to remind everyone, they just lost their first the game at home this season to Manchester United. And they've been talked up, similar to Norwich City, about as a sort of promoted team that's playing the game in the right spirit and all that sort of thing that people talked about when they talked about Blackpool last year. And so I guess hopefully, I think we're all hoping that this will be a bounce back. But Kirsten, what do you think?
Well, we're playing in Wales. And McLeish, I think, has a point to prove. And I don't think that he's necessarily going to field a more attacking side. I think that he seems like, and this is just from me reading his stupid quotes, he seems like the type of guy that is hard-headed and he wants to say, it's okay, I'm making these choices, I'm making a defensive side, and here I'm going to throw it out again. And if we don't go to Swansea with the idea of attacking, we're not going to get all 3 points unless somehow we get a penalty. And even then, I'm not entirely sure we could score it. Sorry.
Andrew?
Yeah, wow. I mean, some part of me wants to believe that he's not going to field a similar kind of side. I mean, okay, I can say with pretty much certainty that he's not going to put Hutton or a similar type person at right midfielder this week. I don't think he's going to play that kind of crap. Hopefully, you know, Hutton goes back to his regular spot or perhaps, you know, gets hit by a plane tomorrow and doesn't play. But, you know, I mean, I hope they play, you know, Nzonzi there. That'd be nice, right? The $10 million guy, it'd be nice to see him play. I think I want to say that they're going to win. Maybe 1-0, maybe 2-1. That's just the feeling I have. I wouldn't be surprised by a draw, and I really wouldn't be surprised by a loss either. But my feeling, my gut feeling, for whatever reason, is I want to say 2-1 Villa. That's what I'm going with.
I can say one thing for sure. I'm not waking up at 5:30 on Sunday morning to watch them win, not after last week. I don't have that kind of faith.
That's hard for you guys, man. I don't know how you do it.
Maybe if we'd won, or maybe if we'd put in an inspiring performance, then I would feel more like, oh, yes, I'm going to sacrifice a bit of sleep on Thanksgiving weekend and get up and watch my team. Wow, we are really depressing tonight, guys. We need Robert.
Do need Robert.
What do we think Robert would
this
say?
This is pretty rough. I think what Robert would say, we'll set out at least a somewhat sort of by his standards attacking side against Swansea, even though I think that he knows that this is a tough part of the season, and that we absolutely need to win games against teams like Swansea. I don't think McLeish is an actual idiot. Like, I don't think he's the dumbest person in the world, and it would be the dumbest person in the world who decides to basically concede 3 to a promoted side. So
exactly.
I think he's got to know that he's got players who can score. He's got, albeit a much more limited roster of players who can create chances. And I think he has to do something, because for as much as he has a go at the players for you know, not performing up to his standards, or what was it he said about he needs the sort of more entrenched to be solid so the young players don't feel any pressure. Does anyone else remember him saying something like that?
I don't have the first part of the quote, but then it says, guys like young Chris Hurd and Barry Bannon are getting a crash course in Premier League football, and if we're relying on these kids for the whole season, it's putting a lot of pressure on them.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, it's disheartening, certainly, but I think that there has to be some sort of response to this, and especially when you consider that we have, the schedule we have coming up. This game has to be important, and this game has to be won. And although, if I'm still predicting for me and for Robert, I think Robert says we could win this, but I the best I can hope for is a draw, honestly. But as long as I'm being optimistic, I'm going to say it's 2-2 because I would like to see us score 2 goals.
That'd be nice.
It would.
I think Gabby will score at least one.
I want to see Darren Bent score just because when we bought him, there were a lot of people calling him a mercenary and saying as soon as things go bad, he's going to leave your club. And even though I don't think there's any chance of him leaving in January, but you know those noises will start to happen if he absolutely sort of is starved for service like he has been so far this season. And if he's sort of playing an Ekblom the Horse shadow, I think people are going to start making some noises. And I don't want to see that happen because he's, I mean, by far the best player on our squad. So.
Does anyone think we can get this pod to Alex McLeish?
I would not like to do that because I imagine, I mean, not to stereotype a Scottish person, but I imagine Alex McLeish is very much the fighting type.
Yeah, I have a relative, my father-in-law is a Glaswegian person, so they are not to be trifled with.
No, yeah, ideally, if Alex McLeish knows absolutely nothing about us, that'd be great. I would love it if people started a McLeish out movement, but I don't want to be associated with it because I'm very scared of him.
I just hate buying bed sheets. It's expensive. You can't afford shit.
That is also true. Do you think that's the reason it hasn't started? Do you think that's why they haven't started a McLeish out movement? Because they think he might actually find them and fight all of them? Because, I mean, that threat wasn't there with Houllier. Houllier's not fighting anyone.
No, he's a lover. I mean, I feel like McLeish is the kind of guy you can't make him uglier. So he's got nothing to lose going into a fight. You can't, you know, you hit him in the face. He doesn't care. Look at his face. It's already jacked up as it is. He's got nothing to lose. He'll brawl.
He's almost certainly a dangerously angry man. I couldn't imagine being in the Villa locker room at halftime on Monday night. I would imagine that he had some words at the very least.
And nothing strikes fear as, you know, you give a stirring, angry speech and then you say, all right, that said, I'm putting you all back out there.
There will be no repercussions.
Yes. That said, you're all going to be starting next week too, so.
Gee, guys, I would love to absolutely bench some of you, but you see what I'm working with here, right? I have absolutely nothing.
He's probably sending all kinds of dirty porn to Martin O'Neill's house. He's like, look what you've done. I can't do anything with this. You've left me with this. You son of a bitch. It's all your fault.
I'm not sure it's dirty porn so much as he just sends pictures of the players' faces and that's enough.
Martin O'Neill's living a good life right now, I'm sure. Somewhere he's just – people are calling him, offering him jobs. He's got money.
And people
love him. People worship him still, Villa fans do. So, I mean, it's a good deal for him.
Oh, it must be just absolutely off the charts awesome to be Martin O'Neill because anytime any job on the British Isles opens, his name will get mentioned in 100 newspaper columns. He gets to turn down them all because right. – For whatever reason, no one's aware that he's just a massive dick and will absolutely just, I mean, we don't need to go into it because we all have our own opinions of McLeish of O'Neill. And I guess people will believe what they believe about O'Neill at this point. And I think Villa fans, I would give them enough credit to hope that they're all jaded. They were all sufficiently jaded by the way that he left the club, not to sort of look back on it with rose-colored glasses. So we'll sort of leave it at that. I wish I've been sort of scrambling over the last 5-10 minutes or so trying to think of a positive way to wrap this up, but I'm kind of at a loss, guys.
Well, I mean, with the schedule that's coming up, you know, the way it is, obviously, it's just going to be pretty scary. And like I said, my whole thing about the mentality going into the Tottenham match with the lineup that he put out there, what does that say for Arsenal, Chelsea, Liverpool, Manchester United? I think Aaron mentioned it on the blog. What reason is there for anyone even try watching the match? I mean, if that's the mentality going in, against better teams. I mean, it's kind of sad. I'm just dumping more rain on the parade here, but.
Well,
Well, I'll say something that probably sounds really cheesy, but at least it's slightly positive, and I mentioned something about it on Twitter, is that as much as we slag on this team, as much as we are frustrated with this team, it doesn't mean that we're going to stop being fans.
No, nobody thinks that. That's crazy.
And I think some people actually do. I think that they criticize what's going on at the club, that we are lesser fans in some way. But it's not going to stop. Villa's still going to be there. We're still going to be supporting them, but we're just going to be frustrated with the methods that are being taken.
Yeah, I don't think that's cheesy at all. I think that's dead on. I realized in my Twitter dealings that people who want to say that shit, it's just not even worth listening to them anymore. I mean, that's not discourse that I want to have. You're arguing about what kind of a fan you are. If you're judging people by what kind of fan they are, then you need to go find something else to do.
Yeah.
Well, and I think there's a different tone to sort of the people who are genuinely frustrated by the way the club is moving now than there was last year when you had all the Julio banners and there was such venom to the anti-Julio movement that I didn't really, I mean, I failed to understand it. I don't think, even at our worst point, I don't think any of us subscribe to that sort of, that the whole anti-Julio thing. And I think that the reason that a lot of us are against McLeish is not because he managed Birmingham. I think that is totally a misestimation, I guess, of the reasons. I think that a lot of people who genuinely care about this club think that McLeish is sort of symptomatic of a destructive, or at the very least underwhelming, sort of worldview and ambition that comes. I mean, that's the top down, and it's difficult. It's difficult to look at a league where people like Manchester City are just spending billions and billions of dollars that you can't be reasonably expected to have at a club like Aston Villa, even though Aston Villa is one of the biggest clubs in the country. Okay, I think I've got it. So this has been the 7500 to Holt podcast. And if we just all hold each other really close, we'll get through this, guys.
That and with alcohol.
Well, yeah, that as well. If we just all get drunk and hug each other, we'll be good. So for Andrew Cieslak.
Yeah.
And Kirsten Schlewitz.
Bye.
I've been Garrett Simpson. Please check out 7500toholt.com for, more of this kind of sadness.